First to the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Welcome, Ken. How are you?
Okay, I'm recovering from the nuclear option.
Let's talk about that in a minute. But I also want to talk about the Syrian strike and the fact that President Trump is getting praise for it from places he usually doesn't and getting criticism from corners that often support him. So here's my question to you, Ken. Do you understand something about President Trump and his foreign policy that you didn't before the strike in Syria?
Well, actually, that's a great question to lead it off with, because I'm not exactly sure if there is a policy. And this is not a criticism of President Trump, because it's the same judgment I think I had with President Obama, that what do you do with Syria? Because the chemical weapons problem did not just begin last week. That was part of the conversation years ago when President Obama was ready to do something, that famous red line that President Assad crossed by launching sarin gas against his own people. So it's been out there for a while. I don't know if it's a policy. I know that President Trump's, I don't mean to be cynical, but his ratings went up, as every president seems to do when they launch an attack on a foreign country. We saw that with Clinton. We saw that with Obama, things like that. But having said that, again, it's very interesting. Only a few days ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago or so, the administration was talking about that Syria could do what it wants. We're not going to worry about Assad. This is not our problem.
Right.
And then suddenly, when you look at pictures of people just suffering from poison gas, calculations change in a heartbeat.
Well, I think you're making a good point here, because seeing UN Ambassador Nikki Haley on some of the Sunday shows saying things like this civil war cannot be resolved with Assad in power is really, and of course there were other administration officials who were not being that blunt, but is quite a change from where the administration was like 10 days ago.
I was just going to say, think of what Rex Tillerson has been saying.
Well, that's
about
what
Russia.
I was thinking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just completely, completely different, right? A complete turnaround from what Donald Trump has been saying since the campaign began.
So I think what we're trying to figure out is, was this an emotional reaction to terrible, terrible, disgusting images from Syria? Or is this some well thought out, now that I'm president, this is how I'm going to view these things?
Well, one, it's almost impossible to see a strategy or coherent strategy. Again, this is not a criticism of Trump, but he didn't come into this office with any defined ideology. I mean, yes, he has a very conservative cabinet. Neil Gorsuch is a very conservative Supreme Court justice. But think of Donald Trump's past, giving to Nancy Pelosi, being pro-choice, all those things. So I think it's clear, we've seen in his career, that Donald Trump is able to react according to what happens. But as far as a planned out strategy, it doesn't feel that way. It just feels like I'm not going to say he's impetuous and just say, well, I'm just going to launch a strike. But the real question is, what next? I mean, launching a strike on a half-empty airbase in Syria is hardly a policy of what to do about Assad and the ongoing civil war there, because we saw that a day after the 59 Tomahawk missiles hit that airbase was in use the next day.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, it does tell Assad that the United States is not going to sit idly by while he gasses his own people. But ultimately, I mean, there's no indication that Trump wants to get involved any further in their war, certainly not with troops.
I'm looking at a tweet here from The Atlantic, and McKay Coppins is going to be with us, a writer for The Atlantic. And the tweet is, Trump was always going to disappoint his isolationist supporters. Do you think that's right?
Well, I don't know, disappoint, sure, because, I mean, I don't think everybody sees in Donald Trump what they want to, good and bad. You pointed out that in the beginning of this program, you said that, well, a lot of his erstwhile allies, people who have supported this policy in the past, is now opposed to it. Those who opposed this kind of policy in the past are supporting it. But that's also politics. The Democrats who supported an attack while Obama was president said, well, you know, we need to wait and see. We need to get Congress involved. And Republicans who opposed Obama action in Syria now say, you know, right on, Mr. President. So a lot of it is politics as well.
Ken Rudin with us. If you have questions and comments for him about the Syrian strike or any of the other political events that are going on this week or last, 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828. You can tweet a question or a comment to me at Kerry, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. One last thing on this, Ken, and I thought this was interesting. Jonathan Tobin in the National Review, a conservative commentator on the Syrian strike, he says it isn't clear yet whether this is the beginning of a more muscular, sensible approach to foreign policy in general and to Syria, Russia, and Iran in particular. But what we do know is that Trump has just demonstrated a capacity to rethink his previously held positions and to act decisively in response to an outrageous crime. In other words, the capacity to act like a commander in chief. This is something few of his critics thought he possessed. Is that really true? Many of his critics thought, well, he's never really going to rise to fully inhabit that mantle of commander in chief. And this incident tells us that he can.
Well, I think the premise of what he's saying is wrong. At least I see it as incorrect, because to say that Donald Trump became presidential because he launched missiles into a half empty airbase. And again, that's not a policy. That's not a strategy. And when the writer just said that now he's leaning, he, the president, is leaning towards more of a sensible policy. Well, I don't know what sensible in the Mideast means anymore. Does it mean, you know, I mean, think of Iraq, think of Afghanistan, think of everything that's going on. Nothing seems to be working. Everybody, I mean, for all the countless billions of dollars, let alone lives that we, the United States, has sacrificed, you know, in trying to get to peace. I don't know if this is the way to do it. I don't know if this is the beginning of something bigger or something more frightening. So I don't know if this means a sensible foreign policy. It certainly is a change from what the administration had been saying.
Ken, I read an interesting piece in the Times this morning about the scramble within, I think it was in the, no, you know, it was in Politico, about the scramble within the administration as the 100 days anniversary approaches to coordinate some messaging about accomplishments in the first 100 days. Well, there aren't very many legislative accomplishments, although I will say that Neil Gorsuch is going to be sworn in today for the Supreme Court.
Yeah, he has been sworn in. Yeah, and that is definitely a big victory for the Trump administration, even though they had to change the rules to get it done. They had to beat back the filibuster and change the rules on the filibuster. Of course, the Republicans can say, well, Harry Reid and the Democrats started it in 2013. But regardless, that is a victory for the Trump administration. But as far as anything else goes or things that are on the horizon, there are a lot of question marks, certainly on tax reform. The Republicans are not on the same page. There's a budget that needs to be passed by October 1st. There's a spending bill that Congress needs to approve when they come back from their break at the end of the month that keeps the government funded. So there are a lot of things still up on the horizon that do have question marks around it. But again, with all the infighting, and we talk about, you know, Steve Bannon versus Rex Tillerson, and we learned this. If you ask me if I learned anything this week, I learned that that Rex Tillerson is Secretary of State. It's not Jared Kushner. I was surprised. I thought that's who it was, but it actually is Rex Tillerson.
Hey,
but I mean, let's not jump ahead about this being a start of a lot of victories to come. We'll see.
Yeah. I think that was the challenge of this group meeting in the White House to say, what have we done for the first 100 days, because they're struggling to really show hard accomplishments. Let me grab a call for you here from Roy in Dayton, Minnesota. Hi, Roy. Your question for Ken.
Yeah, Ken. Just wondering what your thoughts are on the fact that President Trump has now allowed internet service providers to sell our private data to commercial interests, to sell us products, something that was fought against during the last administration.
Yeah, Ken, I can't believe this didn't get more coverage. I did hear
some,
but wow, this is a big deal.
I think it's a big deal, too, and this is anathema to everything the Republicans say they stood for, which is individual liberty and privacy. And I know that the Rand Pauls of the world are screaming and hopping mad about this, but his voice seems to be a lonely one. There seems to be less concern about policy, about privacy, and just anything else goes. And this is definitely alarming, and it's a scary thing. And I think this is the kind of administration who seems to not respect the important role of privacy in communications, just everything like that. It is a very alarming thing, and I'm surprised there was no more coverage as well.
Back to the agenda here, Ken. The Hill had an interesting piece over the weekend about how Democrats are winning the debate over the border wall that Trump wants to build. And this is an interesting couple of sentences from it. But the issue has become a political thorn in the side of GOP leaders who are facing pushback from Republicans voicing concerns over the diplomatic fallout, the disruption to local communities, and the enormous cost of the project, estimated to be anywhere from $22 billion to $40 billion. I read this with some surprise because, I mean, contractors are submitting bids. It's a key measure of President Trump's agenda, and Congress isn't committed to carrying this out?
Well, first of all, I don't think there's anything to worry about because Mexico will pay for it. No,
that's
but here's
right.
the thing. I
yeah.
mean, yeah, exactly. But and Republicans know this is just ridiculous. It's not going to keep any. First of all, the incursions over the border that Donald Trump has talked about throughout the campaign are far fewer than they were, years ago. I think enhanced border security has really helped a lot of things. But Republicans know this is a boondoggle that, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars that once upon a time was dismissed by Donald Trump as saying, well, Mexico will pay it. I guarantee it. I promise. Believe me. Whenever he says believe me, it's time to start questioning it. But Republicans know as well as anybody out there are other priorities, and the wall is not among in it. And of course, as you point out, Democrats are no starter with the Democrats.
I also am interested in what happens in some of these town hall meetings or the more informal meetings that members of Congress who are now on their 2-week break are going to have with their constituents. I mean, they don't have health care reform, although I know they worked on that amendment right before everybody left. They don't have the border wall. There's a lot of stuff that tax reform looks like it's going to be a super heavy lift. What are these members of Congress saying to their constituents, the GOP, about what they've accomplished in the first 75 or 80 days here?
Well, I think the bigger question is how many Republican members will be having these town hall meetings, because we saw
really?
In the last couple of months, they've been just the way the Democrats were rocked by the Tea Party protesters in 2009 and 2010 over Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Republicans are getting ripped apart both by the right and the left about what's going on with health care. Either it's a sellout to the liberals, it's Obamacare light, or they're taking millions of people without off coverage, and that's unacceptable in many Republican districts as well. So we'll see how many of them actually have the town hall meetings. But it's more than just I have nothing to show for my first 90 days or whatever it is. More importantly, it's that things are not being resolved, and things that were promised to be fixed, such as Obamacare, doesn't look any closer than it was prior to the election.
Joe on Twitter wants to know what you think of the demotion of Steve Bannon. By the way, if indeed you think it's a demotion.
Well,
that's
a real question.
Yeah, what it means for Trump's foreign policy. Wasn't Bannon isolationist number one?
I think what we're seeing, I mean, it's too soon to tell, and I don't know if it's, I mean, he was taken off the National Security Council. Why he was on the National Security Council to begin with is just beyond me. But I think it shows that H.R. McMaster, who's the National Security Advisor, is taking his job very seriously, and he's looking for a coherent foreign policy, intelligence policy that you'd not get with ideologues like Steve Bannon. So whatever you feel about Steve Bannon and his battles with Jared Kushner and the infighting in the administration, it seems like McMaster just like Jim Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, and maybe Rex Tillerson in some ways as well, seem to have good heads on their shoulders and seem to say that, this is not about ideology, it's about competence. And I think pulling Bannon off the National Security Council is one of those actions.
Ken, did you happen to read Nick Kristof's column over the weekend with his interview with Hillary Clinton?
I did.
Okay, so your mystery... Hold on. Your mystery sound of the week is in reaction to that column, and let's see if you know who this is.
Gender politics clearly played a role in this election. Not so much necessarily misogyny, but certainly Donald Trump is a cliche of old-fashioned masculinity. Yeah. And a lot of people long for that kind of masculinity, which is never coming back, but they long for it.
Who is that man, and what's he talking about?
That is the usually incorrect David Brooks.
He is often incorrect, I have to say.
I kind of think, he is. And I think that that analysis of why Hillary Clinton lost is a little bit silly. But what was fascinating about the Kristof piece was like, I wish she were like this during the campaign. I wish she were this, unguarded. And I think that, you can think of all the things that, look, misogyny is clearly one of the reasons she lost. I think the fact that a lot of people felt that she didn't have an alternative to Donald Trump, although I think that's kind of a silly and a wrong charge. I just think that, they just didn't like her. I mean, I don't know, Donald Trump promised something new. Hillary Clinton promised more of the same, according to many voters. And I think that's what hurt her, plus the fact that she was not warm and cuddly. Remember in 2000 when you'd love to have a beer with George W. Bush, but Al Gore was so stiff?
But where is it?
This is superficial.
I know we could go on for the rest of the 2 hours here. Where is it written that a woman must be warm and cuddly to run the country? What the heck?
Well, of course. Well, that's exactly it. I mean, but you're right. I think we were in agreement on that.
Ken, thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
Political Junkie with us every Monday.